Welcome to the Spirituality of Strength Training with your host, Anna Willard. This podcast is dedicated to bring you knowledge, wisdom, inspiration, and guidance to wherever you may be on your health journey. For those who are new to me, I am a kettlebell strength coach, a movement nerd ninja, and an empowerment coach on a mission to bring you hope through our health. The root word of health comes from wholeness. The root word of wholeness comes from holy. Despite our differences with religion and spiritual beliefs, we are all human beings with a body that is designed to reflect this holiness through our health. It wasn't until my seventh year as a health profession where I went into a deep awakening of understanding what does it mean to train my spirit and to heal my spirit through the physical. You'll hear a little bit more about my story from other health professionals, from strength coaches, psychiatrists, spiritual gurus and leaders, to other people who talk about the importance of our health as a community body and the health of our planet as well. This podcast is to allow us to step into our whole health, mentally, physically, emotionally, and spiritually. Thank you for being here. If you love what you hear, I encourage you to subscribe. If you want more inspiration and quotes from these podcasts, I encourage you to follow me on Instagram at @Anna_Willard_. I encourage you to do a little bit of a movement, either a yoga flow, go for a walk, sit in nature, as you enjoy this episode. Pause recording. Hey, strong ones, welcome to the show. We have Denzel Allen on the show today. He is a Strong First team leader, which means he has his level one, level two, his body weight and barbell certification. And you also have your Beast Tamer, is that right?
Yes, yep, that is correct.
Yeah. And he's a movement and strength coach down in the Bay Area.
Awesome. Thanks for having me on here. I'm looking forward to this chat.
Yeah, I'm excited that you were willing to come on to the show with us. Now, when we first met, it was in Philly, and it was my first time attempting the Iron Maiden. Yeah. And where I was in my life, I was just very at a place mentally where I wasn't very focused on the lifts nor the certifications. My mind was completely somewhere else just because of a lot of life events. But you came up to me and you're like, don't worry, just like totally nonchalant. You're like, you'll get the second one. I missed my first one. I think that's what you said. Is that right?
Yep. That sounds about right. It's accurate.
I was just like impressed with like just your calm, cool collectiveness that you had about yourself. I'm just like, oh, you'll be fine. Don't worry about it. Yeah. And I'm just like stressing about everything else that was going off into my life. Can you talk about where you were mentally the first time you attempted the Beast Tamer and how you stayed mentally strong to achieve the Beast Tamer? And for those who are listening, the Beast Tamer is basically the male's version of the Iron Maiden. And Denzel, I'll let you explain the lifts and the weight.
All right. So when I was approaching the Beast Tamer, you know, I was pretty confident with the pull-up, pretty confident with the pistol. For the press, this is all using a 106-pound kettlebell. So with the press, every time I looked at the kettlebell, it kind of psyched me out. And I'm like, man, I don't know. There's no way I can get this thing up overhead, you know? And that was kind of the self-talk I was giving myself where I knew I was super confident with the other two. And then when I went to go perform or attempt it for the first time, I left the press for last. Because I was just so psyched out by it. I'm like, okay, let me use this thing. Let me use the pull-up as a confidence booster. Let me use the pistol as a confidence booster. And then once I got to the press, I had never pressed a beast at that point, and it still kind of had that power over me. So went for the first time, got it to move like on a really long arm. So I probably got to move like a foot and still had about another foot to go. And then second attempt, kind of same thing, you know, failed with honor. And I remember Tom Lang, you know, I went and trained with him for a bit after I failed the first time. And he had this mantra of too easy. You know, anytime I did anything, he would say, it's too easy, it's too easy. And I was like, mm-hmm. you know what? What a better way to approach it. Even if it's something that I haven't done before, I should look at it as this is something that you can do as long as you do the right steps in place to get to that point. So I think honestly, it was 4 weeks in between failing and passing it. And I think the main thing that helped me pass that second time was simply that mantra of going in believing that I could press it and just having the confidence that I could do it.
That's so interesting, because as you're sharing your story, I feel like I did exactly the same thing you did, but with the pistol. Mm-hmm. Like press was like super easy for me. Pull up was great. Pistol, just because again, the long levers, my legs are so long to my torso. I was psyching myself out with the 24 thinking it's super heavy for my legs. Like for some reason, like mentally, that's what I was saying every time I would practice my pistols. I'm like, no, this is so heavy. It's almost like too heavy. And it's similar how you said you allowed the kettlebell to have power over you.
Yeah.
And I think that's such a profound statement mentally when we're training, is how to control our mindset going into the lifts, so we have control over the situation versus allowing the situation or the weight of the situation to have control over us. How has training with this type of stuff with the kettlebells helped you mentally in everyday life?
You know, I think the biggest carryover is being able to track the things that you used to not be able to do, and then kind of remember the journey that you went on to get to the place where you currently are, of being able to do all these things that you weren't able to do weeks before, months before, years before. So in life, like almost any time, you know, you come to an obstacle, it's a easy carryover to be like, okay, this thing's stopping me right now, and just looking at it as a right now kind of thing. It's not a forever. So let's say if I have to backtrack, or, you know, business or something's not going as well as I would like, it's having the patience of knowing, okay, this is just a part of the process. It's a part of the journey. You know, as long as I keep doing the proper steps underneath it, I'll get to wherever it is that I want to go. So. Mm-hmm.
I think you bring up a really key point, is like the patience. Like one thing I tell myself, like there's power in patience. Can you dive in a little bit more, going back to the strength training aspect? Why or how has patience really defined or refined you within the strength protocols?
So the thought process of like having longevity as opposed to trying to get something quick and now has really saved me from injury. I remember when I was younger, I would rush, like when I was first kind of getting into weightlifting, I would rush to just try to put more and more weight on the bar, like doing bench press. And then I remember my shoulders always feeling kind of sore, kind of wonky, would kind of hurt. And I would just, you know, just keep pushing through, trying to get to a goal super quick. And then basically since finding strong first and finding, you know, a more systematic approach to things, it's allowed me to feel like, okay, because I know before I was doing way too much. And sometimes it feels like, okay, now I'm not doing that much, but to see the progress still happen, I'm like, okay, that's where patience gets me. It makes me feel better from day to day. Energy is much higher. My strength's going up and my body doesn't hurt. So I'm like, it's all a plus. So if I can be patient there and then still have the outcome that I want, like, why can't I be patient with everything else?
Yeah. Yeah. Now, how did you discover Strong First and kettlebells?
So kettlebells I've been using since I became a trainer. And even when I was an athlete going to a coach. But one day when I was working at Advantage Personal Training in Mystic, Connecticut, this lady came in. She was like, maybe in my head, she was like 5 foot tall, like, you know, very small build. And I remember her just swinging around the 32 kg, like it was nothing, like it was a toy. And I'm like, dang, like I struggle swinging that thing. Like what's going on? And I have 80 pounds on this person. So then she put on like a brief introduction to like actual kettlebell movements, kettlebell swings. And it was just totally different from how I had been doing it before. The way she had taught it to us was way more what my background was in like athletics. So she brought the broad jump into it and had us broad jump first. And then she told us, okay, now you're going to broad jump without moving. And I was like, whoa, okay. And like, and then when we did some swings and then we went back to the broad jump, I was like, wow, like this feels so much different, so much better. I was immediately hooked. I remember me and my friend Kiefer were like, we gotta go to one of these courses that they're talking about. Like this stuff seems serious. This stuff seems like it's gonna, you know, take our coaching to the next level. So then we went up to Boston for a user course, met Jason and Lauren Pack for the first time and Phil. And you know, it was, you know, the user course, like 8 hours of just diving into kettlebells. And we immediately were like, okay, well now we need to go to the certification. Like it's only the next step. And then, you know, it's been that sense where I would go up there, I would get some training from Jason and Lauren. I would send them film of my skills. I was so used to, you know, people just saying, not having much to say when it came to like the way I was performing in sports or the way I was performing in anything else. You know, I wasn't really used to getting constructive criticism. So that was new and I liked that. And it was nice to have something to have to work at, to be like, you know, I thought I was just going to be good at it naturally. And then to kind of be humbled by the movement, to have to take the step back, to then again, go back to patience, to have that patience of, okay, you have to practice this in order to get better. Like it's not just going to happen because you want it. Like you have to put in the work. So
right,
that's kind of how I found them.
Nice. And it just kind of snowballed effect with all the other courses and everything else. Yeah,
exactly.
That's great. I remember when I first started training for the certification, one of my friends who's certified moved, and I was like, who do I work with then? Mm-hmm. And that's how I met Andrea. And it was like a month out from my certification, and I was doing everything wrong so much where she's like, you just need a hike for 2 weeks. I'm like, what? Just practicing the hike? Are you kidding me? So I really had to learn and trust the process and trust the patience of it too. Because I was like, I have just a couple of weeks to like master this stuff. But I was so thankful for what she taught me, because that has saved me and everyone else who I have been able to work with. So that patience is like, and being humbled by the process has been key for me. With being, how long have you been a trainer?
Since 2013. Yeah, since 2013. And I interned a few summers as like a trade-off to get when I was playing football in college. I, you know, was a college athlete, didn't really have a job, couldn't really pay for training, but I knew the importance of it and how good it made me feel and prepared for the season. So as like a trade-off, I would help set everything up, kind of, you know, run some of the guys through drills, and then that way I'd be able to get free training. So it was a nice little like introduction to that side of it without even knowing at that time that that's what I was going to do.
Nice. Cool. Now with being of color, an African-American, how has that kind of changed your journey within the fitness world? I know you probably have had maybe a little bit more difficult or different obstacles. Do you mind just sharing some of those stories with us?
Yeah. So, You know, I think the biggest thing, there hasn't been too much since I've been in the fitness industry, other than, you know, looking around and being like, okay, if I want to learn from a peer that looks like me, where do I find them? You know, there's usually not at, like, not to throw any shade, but there's usually not like the Perform Better conference or anything like that. Like Strong First is probably the most diverse as far as leadership that I've seen from most of these other fitness companies or anything within that realm. But I'd say probably the way I carry myself is more so has to do with like past experiences or, you know, certain stereotypes. Like usually I won't get loud. Like I don't think ever in my life have I ever yelled at someone just from not wanting to fall into the stereotype of being, you know, an angry Black man, you know, like even in situations where anger would be completely prompted and kind of right, I still, you know, have chosen to be calm in those situations. So since being a coach, you know, I don't know. I don't think there's ever been a time when I thought somebody wouldn't work with me because I'm Black I've never really had anyone questioning my intelligence within the fitness field because of that. But definitely growing up and in school, those more so were times when I've had to face some of those challenges.
As like growing up and as an adult, a lot of times with like, at least what I have found with progressing with business and career, you have to like face some of those like mental scars of trauma. How have you kind of overcome some of those things from the childhood that you were raised up in with some of those things that you referred to?
You know, I think it's more so just knowing that it's out of my control. Like, someone else's judgment, I can't really control that. And I think more so it's for me to not judge other people as well has been the biggest thing for me to forget, okay, maybe this person's thinking that, or, you know, this person in the past might've said this and now I want to, you know, tiptoe around, where now I'm like, you know, I'm not really looking for, approval or anything like that. So, I think it's allowed me to just feel like I can speak a little bit more freely and, yeah, and just really just trying to control what I can and not worry about the rest.
Going back to kind of like that mental aspect of what you're saying about what you can control and what you can't. I was reading one of your blogs about how you started meditating. And I could totally relate of what you were saying about like it being too hippy dippy and that stuff. And what made you just go down that route where you're like, okay, I'm going to just try this?
So I think when I started, it was shortly after my dad was diagnosed with like prostate cancer. And I had the, just the thought that popped into my head, like up to this point, you've lived a, you know, a pretty trauma-free kind of cushy life. And you're human. So there's nothing that's shielding you from the inevitables in life, you know? So I think just coming to that and being like, I don't think I have anything. At that time, I didn't have anything that I'm like, if something happens, a way of dealing with it that was healthy. So I'm like, I was reading up and kind of came to meditation as being, you know, having so much carryover besides being able to deal with trauma, but just the way of just having that awareness and being able to look at situations from different angles and knowing that the way that you view something isn't the only way. And if that's not the only way, then you have the ability to kind of change that viewpoint. So if it's a negative mindset on something, you could have a better mindset over it. You could have a positive mindset over it, or at least try to find the light in it. So, so that's when I really started to get into meditation a little bit. And then it's definitely been a more consistent habit since my dad passed. I remember, I remember when I had to fly back to Connecticut, and then I'm like, oh, now I have to go back to California and try to start my business. Like, this timing of this, like, not, you know, obviously any time is horrible.
Right.
But I was just like, damn, like, starting a business right now is the last thing I want to do. Like, I don't want to put in any of that work. So I remember just going, and I meditate for a while, just like staying out into the ocean, like standing, seating, sitting, kind of just any way that I could. And I feel like that helped me sort through everything as far as, you know, past memories, what are the ways that, you know, I can continue forward and not let this hinder me, but also how can I accept it for what it is, you know, and just look at it from that standpoint. And I think just being able to have the time to sit and really let thoughts come and go, you know, kind of see what is actually on my mind. And and then just being like, okay, bring some awareness to it, and then just go from there. And then I would journal afterwards, and getting it on paper was nice. And
I have like this love obsession with water and being by the ocean. Mm-hmm. And what you're saying of allowing your mind and your thoughts to like just freely come and go, similar to like what the waves do, they freely come and go. Did that help you physically to sit near the ocean and feel that presence of the waves coming and going to allow your mind to have that ebb and flow as well? Yeah.
Absolutely. I mean, the ocean to me is so, I mean, it's so many things. It's so calming, but it can be so powerful and so violent at times. I was just talking to my friend yesterday about Bruce Lee saying I'm late to the Bruce Lee like bandwagon, but his expression, you know, be like water, I'm like, it's so valuable, you know. Just being like, okay, this is the waves, they come and go, you know, there's always gonna be ups and downs in life, and just kind of trying to, you know, just ride the wave. So the highs, the lows, just try not to crash.
No, I love it. I usually give the analogy of like, all right, this is a new wave, we're learning how to ride it, like I don't know this one, but we're gonna ride it. And if I fall, I know how to swim, so we're all good, like. I know for myself, there's been a lot of death in the life that I've lived, and movement has always been a place where I have found the hope. How was strength training, did the strength training change for you after your dad passed away, and the importance of health with his story, how it has played into yours?
Yeah, so I think the biggest takeaway for me was, you know, to allow time away from movement, not to feel like, well, not a movement, but away from strength training specifically. Mm. But also to know that this is, again, a longevity thing. Because, I mean, he was super active, super fit for a majority of his life. But, like, all it takes is, you know, a few years of being super inactive. And you can see that, you know, it's one of those things that's not just a short amount of time you have to do it for. It's kind of a for life kind of thing. So there's been a little, you know, paranoia behind that, being like, wow, I remember how he was, you know, when I was a kid, and we'd race against each other, and, you know, he was teaching me how to throw a football and baseball, and I mean, he could still kick the top of a door frame, even in like his later days. So a lot of that stuff was built in, but just not moving for a good amount of time will just, which is really not good for our minds and for our bodies. So I think the biggest thing for me is just making sure that I have some sort of movement practice that's even outside of strength training. So if I'm not in a gym somewhere, like, how can I still make sure that I'm moving, expressing my body in different ways, and just trying to learn as many and being exposed to as many different ways of movement that we can kind of come by. So last year I got into jiu-jitsu a little bit. I was doing that for a while. I need to get back into that. I did the TSC for the first time. I surfed for the first time.
Yeah, I was gonna ask you about that. So how was that?
Oh man, like, it was one of those things where I'd let fear stop me from doing it for so long. Like, we took a little month hiatus before we moved out this way from New York, and we went to Thailand and Bali. And, you know, those are great surfing areas. And I was like, oh, I'm surfing on there. Got down there and looked at the waves, and I was like, no, no way I'm going out there. Like, not a chance. So, I mean, to get onto the board, to get out onto the waves, it took overcoming a lot of fears that I had of just like open water and sharks and, you know, drowning and just basically anything that can come, any kind of fears that, you know, your mind will think of, I was letting stop me from it. And then once I finally, you know, had the courage to do it, did it on New Year's Eve actually. And I was like, what? Why? Like, was I hesitating for so long? Like, it was so peaceful, it was so calming. It was probably one of my favorite ways of moving that I've ever done.
Like,
super peaceful.
The last, let's see, I had a trip down to San Diego in 2016, and it was interesting at that time. I was like, I felt my body like craving to surf. Mm-hmm. And at the time I was still water skiing and I wasn't competing or anything like that, but it was interesting that I found my body craving the surf. Mm-hmm. And I still haven't really explored the reason why, but I was able to surf. I've surfed before, but recently I was able to surf when I was down in LA, maybe two or three weeks ago. Mm-hmm. And there's a point of it that's almost like this energizing exchange. I don't know if you felt that with the waves. And, there's been a couple times where I've been in the like open water with, there's a lot of waves and it just like pumps me up for the rest of the day.
Yeah.
I don't, can you explain a little bit more about your experience of why surfing like energizes you? In a different way versus just strength training?
Yeah. I mean, like the way of, I felt energized, but like relaxed afterwards in like a way that was just like super calming. I remember going out, we caught a few waves, kept going out, caught a few. And then, my friend Jesse that was teaching all of us, he's like, let's go beyond the waves so that you guys can experience it out there. He's like, it's so much more calm out there. And I'm like, you know, like a little bit of, you know, a little scariness came back. And I'm like,
I'm going to pause you real quick. Do you mean by the waves just like breaking onto the beach and then going past those?
Yes.
Is that right? Okay. I just want to make sure we're understanding that. Okay. Go for it.
So then when we went beyond the waves and I'm sitting out there on the board, I'm like, wow, this is so calming. Like, I would have thought that was the most fearful area is beyond the waves, but it was so calming out there to be looking towards the beach, seeing the waves break between you and the beach. And I was like, wow, this is just a completely different experience than what I was expecting. Calming and also just like exciting. Like, you can kind of feel the wave come just pass you by. You can choose to, you know, try to catch its energy or just kind of let it flow through you essentially. I don't know, that whole experience was just so much fun. And then I got a gift card, so I'll be going back soon, sometime soon, and surfing some more. And
nice. Well, you got me excited because I haven't gotten past that breaking point yet, or like past the waves or anything like that. So, What advice do you have for people, or even like, what do you tell your clients that have fear with like training with the kettlebell? Because I know the kettlebell can be like super intimidating. Mm-hmm. So what do you have? What advice do you have for clients or people who are new to kettlebells? And then what advice do you have for trainers and the importance of for us to try new and different movements to overcome some of our own fears? Mm-hmm. And how does that help us make a better or improve our coaching skills? Mm-hmm. That's a lot of questions, I know.
So for the first question, like clients that are scared of using a kettlebell or something like that.
Yeah.
Usually, I mean, I try to tell people it's not about the tool. So to get them really good at whatever the movement pattern is beforehand. So, you know, someone walks in and they see someone swinging a bell and they're like, oh, what the heck? Like, I'm never doing that. Like,
yeah.
I'm like, look, like there's, don't worry about that yet. Like there's plenty of steps before we get to that point. And then just doing like comparisons. Like, I mean, I start most people off so light where, you know, they're picking up their kid or they've picked up their kid at some point. The kid's heavier than the 8 kg bell. Like that's 18 pounds. If you're picking up a 30 pound kid, like you're doing that with no thought in your head ever. So just kind of trying to apply it to anything that they're doing, grocery bags, boxes, if they've ever moved their house, like anything.
Woman's
so
purse.
So it's just kind of trying to compare it to, well, you're essentially should be doing these movements daily, like if you're ever lifting anything, which I think 100% of people are picking something up from the floor on a day-to-day basis, and just being like the kettlebell is just a tool for that. Like if you're not ready for it, there's no rush. Like, you know, we're not trying to rush to a finish line. There's no finish line. Like this is just kind of gonna be a process or a journey, whatever way you want to view it. Yeah, so usually when they're fearful of it, which a lot of people are, and it's understanding, but it's just telling them, you know, there's patience, and once you feel ready for it, I usually will set it by them and be like, you don't have to use it yet, but you know, if you want to, it's right there, it's looking at you,
getting
it's waiting. Yep, exactly. So yeah, and then for the second question of why it's important to move your body in different ways, especially as a coach, I think it just allows your tool bag to be a little bit bigger as far as cueing, as far as experiences of being able to connect with your clients of, you know, like if your clients had the background of being a runner, like having ran some sort of race before, I think is helpful of just knowing where their mindset might be or what their body might feel like. Same with like someone who's doing jiu-jitsu or play basketball, football. It's not like you have to do any of these things at a high level, but you should at least go out and try and learn like the body positions. That way you can figure out, okay, the stuff that I'm teaching, how does it apply to what they're doing in their everyday life? Like my whole goal is to get people to do activities that they love and to continue and to be able to continue doing those things as they get older. So being able to apply, okay, if you're playing tennis, like you're in the hip hinge position 98% of the time, except for like when you're going to serve and you toss the ball up. But even that, usually you start in a little bit of a hinge and then you extend.
Right.
So being able to apply any of those things to whatever the everyday movement is just a huge, huge part of coaching, in my opinion. So anytime you can try something new, it's like, you know, expect to not be good at it and just know it's a learning process, and it puts yourself in your students or your client's shoes so that, you know, you always remember what it's like to be a beginner at something. I think that's probably the biggest lesson in trying new stuff all the time.
Yeah. And then third question, why should we try things that gets us out of like, or things that we may fear?
So I think it's good to try things that you may fear simply to be able to look back the next time you're facing something that's scaring you and be like, look, I already conquered this. I already conquered that. Like, these are all these things that I used to allow to have so much power over me that I now took my power back from. So now anytime mm-hmm. that I feel like I'm giving the power away, I know that no, like I should have the control over that. Like there's no reason for me to be thinking I don't have the control over this situation or that, or even if there, you don't have the control, it's being able to make that distinction. So, okay, mm-hmm. are you fearful? Why are you fearful? If your reasons are, you know, pretty valid, okay, but you should still do it. Mm-hmm. you know, just, yeah. Like, yeah, this is kind of high when I'm up here. I don't want to jump off of this cliff. Like, okay,
right.
Go ahead, jump. You just watch 5 other people do it. Like, you'll be all right.
It's too good. You keep referring to this, the phrase of like the power over uh-huh. versus like, and I think I read one of your other blogs talking about like giving people your power and realizing that. Do you have any examples of when you are referring to this, not with the kettlebell? Because a lot of our listeners here have done the kettlebell or have practiced with the kettlebell. Mm-hmm. But do you have any examples like in that life of like when you give your power over and how to take your power back?
Okay, so in life, like giving your power away, I think a lot of times with anything where you try to blame, like I am not at this point in my life because of some outside force, right? Mm. Like mm-hmm. it's an easy thing to fall into, especially because, you know, part of it might be true. Like maybe some people don't want to hire you because you're a woman, or maybe someone doesn't want to hire you because you're Black, but what are the things that you can do? What are the things that you can control? If you just simply, you know, say, I can't do this because they don't want me to do that, then you're never going to do it. But if you constantly, you know, can keep the belief in yourself and understand that you have the power to create change, then I think that's how you can keep your power and make sure that you continue to progress. So anytime that you're like, you know, blaming the outside world or outside forces for your current state, I just think it hinders your possibility for growth. So, so that's kind of would be an example.
Yeah, no, that's great. I think, it seems like our brains think similarly, because a lot of times I'll think of like, does the bell have control over me or do I have control over the bell? Mm-hmm. And again, like what you were saying, it's an outside force, but how am I responding to it?
Yeah.
And I think a lot of times in life, that's how I think about things of like, am I allowing this situation to control me and hinder me and hurt me? Mm-hmm. Or am I going to just stand in my power and allow, be true to what I know versus blaming and taking ownership of my own stuff?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Exactly.
Yeah. I have another question for you. Oh, how did you transition from an athlete to be a trainer? Because I know a lot of times, even for myself, like being a competitive water skier, we have, at least I did, have identity of like, I'm a water skier. I compete in water skiing. How has it been for you? Because you played football, right?
Mm-hmm.
In college?
Yeah.
How has it been for you to like taking that humble aspect of, I'm a trainer now, I'm here to give versus like perform?
Yeah.
How has that, or what were the process that you went through,
you know,
to get to where you're at right now?
I think I was just really lucky with some of the people that were mentoring me in my early days, like my old boss, Greg Drab. I mean, he would always kind of emphasize getting to the root of why people are here to see you and making sure you're putting the client first. I mean, they had a big giant thing up on the wall that said, we're the best part of our client's day, which was basically you need to be doing everything you can to be the best part of this person's day. Like they might be coming in after work, super stressed out, or if they see you before they go into work, things at home might not be great. Things with family, you know, all those things. So it was just constantly kind of putting into my head that, you know, it's about them. When they're here, it's about them. Like you grow as a person so that you can be better at your career, and then treating it as a career as well. So, I think I was just really lucky of having him kind of harp that on me. And he was also my coach when I was an athlete. So he mm-hmm. kind of knew
Nice.
He kind of knew, yeah, he knew me pretty well to know, you know, like where my mindset was, what were the right things to say to get me to actually see what I should be doing myself. You know, I wasn't always a do this. It was really never do this, do that. It was always a let me guide you so that you can come to this conclusion on your own. So I think, you know, and then with the way my football career ended, I was over it. So, yeah, I was over it. I mean, like, I remember we had our pro day coming up, and I was like, I am not doing that. And it took one of my friends, like, being like, dude, this is like a once in a lifetime just experience. He's like, even if you're not expecting anything, like, you know, being invited to team's mini camp or preseason or anything like that, he's like, it's still an experience that not everyone has the opportunity to do, so you should do it. And that was the only reason why I did the pro day, but I was so over it already at that point.
Were you just burnt out?
Yeah, you know, like, it just, college kind of took the fun out of it for me. I remember high school, you know, I wasn't really that coachable, but I played a ton, which was cool. College, didn't expect to play a lot. I walked on, ended up, you know, making the travel team. But it was just like, there was just so much that I wasn't really trying to do. Like, I realized all I liked doing was playing. I didn't like doing any of the other aspects that come with it. As far as, like, you know, the meetings, the like 4 meetings a day, watching the tape, like all that stuff. Like, I'm more interested in the tape now, but then I'm like, nah, I just want to play. And then there's like super specific ways of playing, and I just wasn't that coachable at the time. And so I just lost the love for it.
Was working with the Cuttable changed your attitude about being coachable?
Oh yeah.
What changed that? Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, that among other things, I studied psychology in college. That helped a ton. Reading a few books like How to Win Friends and Influence People. That
great book.
Yeah, great book. That one kind of helped me become more coachable. And then just also, yeah, being humbled by the kettlebell and being like, okay, if I want to get good at this, I'm gonna need to get coached. Like, I'm gonna need to have somebody critiquing me. And so I mean, all of that, you know, like whenever I see someone not being coachable, I've been there, so I have a little more understanding of where their mindset is, of thinking, you know, you don't need help and all of that. And you can have that mindset, and I currently think it's not the best mindset to have. I definitely think being coachable is probably one of the best skill sets to have, is being able to take criticism, being able to listen, and all the other skills that come along with being coachable can apply to everything.
I was just going to ask you, like, because you referred to it as a skill, which a lot of things in life are a skill. Mm-hmm. What would you say the top 3 skills are to be coachable?
Know that you don't know. Not be afraid to ask questions and to listen.
Nice. I'm just writing those down.
Yeah.
Good one. I had another question that, as you were talking about all that. Oh, so I'm big on like intuition and listening to your body. And I think with training with kettlebells, that's really like fine-tuned that aspect. I think there is a time and a place for a coach, and it's kind of twofold. Do you believe that? And do you also believe there's a time with that you need to not have a coach to really dive in and listen to your body and understand and like almost have the coachable skill set towards your body? Does that make sense?
Yeah.
What I'm saying?
Yes. Okay. So Yeah, I mean, I definitely agree. And I think usually that's what makes a great coach is that they can be there and know not to be there. So to essentially allow, you know, like I'm teaching you, but I need to allow for you to kind of go through some of the struggles to figure stuff out. Like I can't be telling you everything, because then if you get into a bad situation, you're not going to have those skills to be able to get yourself out of it, right? So it's almost like critical thinking, where you don't want to be given all the answers, but you want to be shown how should I be thinking or approaching this thing so that I can solve this problem. And I think that's what good coaching should do. So there are definitely times where, you know, you should have someone that's critiquing this, this, and that. But then there should be other times where you're like, okay, I know what they've said. I hear that voice in my head. Now, how can I feel my way through this? How can I create this awareness on my own? What is it that they saw to give me that cue? Like starting to look at things from that standpoint, I think are key.
Yeah, of almost giving the time to practice and put into play what the coach either corrected or gave them to work on or something like that.
Yep.
Yeah. Yeah. No, that's great. I love that. We're going to be wrapping it up soon. Do you have any other like topics or any points that you want to cover with life and strength training?
So I think kind of what we were talking about earlier with trying new things is just kind of becoming comfortable with the uncomfortable. And not saying that you should be like uncomfortable all the time. Like definitely, you know, have pillows, have a nice bed, have all that stuff. But like, but just being able to know when you're struggling that it's not the end of the world. Like you've been there before, you can make it through. So just knowing where your place of uncomfort is and going to it anytime that you feel like you're getting way too relaxed, like you got your feet up and you're just coasting. Like anytime that you find yourself there, it's good to try to mix things up a little bit.
So two questions from that. How can someone almost kind of like put a radar out mentally for themselves of like when they're getting too comfortable? Mm-hmm. And I forgot the second question. We'll just go with the first one and see if the second one comes to me.
Well, I mean, for me, it's like, look around, see, are you just having the same conversations all over and over again? If you haven't actively gone out and tried to seek discomfort, most likely you're in that place of having been comfortable for a really long time. Because it needs to be an active process. So usually that's what I'll try to assess is, okay, when's the last time I did something that I didn't want to do? Like, okay, did that thought pop in my head and did I choose to not do it? Or was I like, okay, I guess I'll do it because I don't want to. And I think, you know, I think some people, you know, that might be their work where they're constantly every day doing something that they don't want to, but that's not really what I'm talking about. And that situation would be to stop doing that, right? Like that would be the uncomfortable part, would be to quit the job that you're not happy with. Like, but for people that are super happy and super comfortable with what they're doing, it's like, just, you know, look around and know that you probably haven't grown in a bit and you should seek that out just to make sure that you're still growing. Cause you know, if we're not growing, we're heading in the wrong direction.
So why should we seek discomfort in the way that you're describing?
I think there's more lessons anytime you're uncomfortable. There's more things that you have to kind of figure out in order to settle down. It's almost like when you're lifting something heavy and then like if you have to do it again, you can't be still hyped up and stressed out and high tension. You have to find that relaxation. So that was one of the things with jiu-jitsu, is like, okay, like I'm rolling with this person. This person's kind of handling me. Where can I find the moment to relax so I can catch my breath without them noticing? So it's like in those uncomfortable situations, how can you find some sort of sense of comfort? And I think if you seek out, you know, more comfortable stuff, you don't really get those lessons of being able to figure out when things are hard, because we don't have control over the moments that will come that are hard and challenging. So the more we can already seek those out and know that we have the skill for dealing with those uncomfortable situations, the easier it will be to deal with those hard moments when they arise.
Yeah. I love the analogy that you just gave of the jujitsu of like being held down and like still finding that place of like relaxation, mm-hmm. And being able to find your breath. And just through my own healing and everything, I started this dance healing program, and there's a lot of dancing to it. Mm-hmm. And it was interesting the times that I've danced before, and anytime I've learned a new movement, I usually hold my breath. Mm. And it's fascinating that you talked about finding that relaxation in a uncomfortable situation and finding your breath, mm-hmm. because it was just this last week where I was like, I found my breath with dancing. Nice. Like, it was like, oh my gosh, I can breathe now with dancing again. But I think a lot of times with any new skill that we learn, at least from my experience, we have that tendency to always be like in that fight or flight, yeah. and like that tension where we don't really find the answers if we're always like locked up in that place, yeah. physically and mentally. And this is just the power of our breath, is allowing our body to find that relaxation. So no. Your analogy was like perfect. It just brought back a lot of memories of me not owning my breath, yeah. yeah. on some of those things. Anything else that you would like to wrap up? Those are really good topics about being uncomfortable.
Yeah, I mean, I guess going along with that, I was just a few weeks ago down in Santa Clarita for Pablo's second wind, and that was yeah. over a lot of like breathing drills, tension drills, relaxation drills, and just kind of the yin and yang between those, and how breath is the power between all of that. You know, you can use your breath to help create more tension, or you can use your breath to help create ultimate relaxation. And I think just with that, the fact that he could have 2 days of, you know, teaching you that stuff just shows the importance of it all. Like, everything's always going to be, you know, the opposite ends, and how do you deal with both?
Right.
Yeah.
Well, and that just like gives power or the credentials of like the importance of our breath. Mm-hmm. At least for me, I didn't realize the importance of my breath until I started training with the kettlebells, and how that's helped me in like everyday situations. So yeah. You brought that up. Do you have any stories besides the jujitsu where you found your breath?
Yeah. So, friend of mine, this is around the time that I was going, same kid that told me to do the pro day. He was training to be a like special force guy in the Air Force. And one of the things that he was going to have to do eventually was like dive school and like swimming and all this stuff. So he was going to the gym at like 5 or like 6 a.m. every day in Connecticut. And I was like, okay, I'll join you. Like, I'm terrified of like giant Olympic sized pools like this. Like, I have such fears of drowning, of just, you know, not breathing too. So I would go with him, and I remember the first like underwater I tried to do, I maybe made it like 15 meters, like made it nowhere. And then by the end, I was able to go like down, back, underwater, which was pretty good, or down, at least down. I don't really remember. I have a video somewhere, but just the ability to relax without air was like such a weird thing to get over, being like, yeah. I want to gasp right now. Like, oh my God,
right.
I need a breath.
Yeah.
Being able to find that like state of relaxation was huge. I didn't really dive that deep into it at the time, but like that was a huge part of gaining some sort of relaxation. I think it started the process of understanding the importance of breath.
Mm-hmm.
But
yeah, it's funny how you bring that up, because I recently started, well, one of my goals this year is to get my free dive certification, or get it like level one. I haven't really started looking into it. But I've been swimming a little bit with holding my breath, and watched a little bit of YouTubes and like the science of it. But it's interesting what you're just saying again, of just like how to hold your breath and how to resist that gas or gasp while keeping your body relaxed. And it's just, again, it goes back to like that mental strength or that mental muscle. And I think with the beauty of all this is like similar to what you were saying before of like keeping your temper when you wanted to raise your temper.
Yeah.
When we train this way, it allows our muscle or our mental muscle to hold back some of the things that may not be healthy to say or how to react. Have you found similarities to that?
Oh yeah. Yeah. I mean, I think that's a huge connection there is just being able to have that restraint of having like the patience to, you know, control yourself and know that you do have the power to control yourself. So any emotion that arises, you know, whether it's like a physical feeling or a mental feeling, it's, you can control both. As long as you put enough time in to kind of create the power within yourself to have the strength in those situations, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. Awesome. All right. Well, this, we are going to be wrapping it up. So any last tips or anything else you want to say?
No, I think that's it. Thanks for having me on here.
Yeah. Thank you so much, Denzel. All right, listeners, thank you so much for tuning in. If you enjoyed this episode, make sure you share it out to your family and friends and share the love with the 5 stars in a comment below. Other than that, I'll see you guys next week. We are peace out.